Happy birthday to Storyworthy. Happy birthday to Storyworthy from Todd Glass. Happy birthday to Storyworthy. Happy birthday to
Hey, it's Graham Elwood calling all the way from beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada, where it's about 175 degrees, wishing Storyworthy a happy 5th anniversary. Hopefully I'll do something stupid this week to give you guys another great story.
Hi, this is Kathy Ladman, and I just want to wish you a really happy 5th anniversary, Storyworthy.
Hey there, this is Sugar Ray Leonard wishing Storyworthy a happy 5th anniversary. All the best. Love it.
I'm calling Suicide Hotline. I don't know if I have the right number. I don't appreciate getting an answering machine. But no, this is Ed Krasnick, and I am wishing Storyworthy a very happy 5th anniversary, and I'm so glad that you went with Storyworthy instead of Worryworthy.
Hi, this is Retta, and I just want to wish Storyworthy a very happy 5th anniversary. Congrats, guys.
Well, hello, this is Margaret Gray, and I did want to check in with everyone there at Storyworthy because I know this is your 5th anniversary, and I saw it here on the calendar, Frank. I saw it here on the calendar.
What's his name?
His name, Frank.
Christine. This is Frank Gray.
Her name, Christine. Hello. And just everyone, very, very happy 5th anniversary. From all of us here in the Gray family, I'm Margaret Gray.
Yay! How the Christ did he get in here?
Hi, this is Margo Lightman. Happy anniversary, guys.
Hey, it's Jim Coughlin. I just wanted to wish Storyworthy a happy 5th anniversary. Hope you guys have a Storyworthy day, a Storyworthy month, a Storyworthy year, and a Storyworthy half a decade.
Hey, kitten, it's Lisa, your favorite sister. Can't send you any money this month, but I want to wish you and Story World a happy anniversary. Hey, by the way, it's noon here, so it must be about 9 o'clock there.
Hey, Christine, it's Paul Mercurio, your friend. Happy 5th anniversary. It's amazing. I think 5 years is the copper anniversary. I don't know, but happy anniversary. You're the best. Love the show. It was great being on with you. Congratulations.
Yo, yo, yo. It's Bryn Hill, and I'm here to wish Storyworthy a very, very, very happy and dope 5th anniversary.
Hey, Storyworthy. This is Kelly Carlin. I heard it's your 5th anniversary. I hope you get it on tonight.
Hi, it's Matt Oswalt wishing Storyworthy a very happy 5th anniversary. You know, the Confederate Army only lasted 4 years, and Rizzoli and Isles only lasted 3 seasons, so clearly you guys are doing something right. Congrats.
Hey, Peanut. It's Karen, your favorite sister. Happy anniversary to you and Hannes. I really, really mean it. On Story World, remind me to tell you the story about how Daddy buried Pokey, remember? The turtle? He buried it alive.
Hello, this is Fraser Smith, comedian and professional log roller, and I want to say that Storyworthy is just that, and is perhaps the best show ever. Peace.
Hey, it's Lilibet Snellings wishing... Oh, Jesus, sorry. Phone call interrupting.
Hey, this is Pete Hamelman wishing a happy Hannesversary to Storyworthy and Christine Blackburn, the cat's meow of podcasting.
Peace.
Hey, it's Steve Cooper from Cooper Talk, and I want to wish Storyworthy a very, very happy 5th anniversary. Yay.
Hey, it's Hal Rail wishing Storyworthy a very happy 5th anniversary. Oh, boy. You have many more celebrities on your show. Yay!
Hey, it's Wendy Wilkins. Wow, Storyworthy, you've lasted longer than every bra I've ever owned.
Hey, it's Frank Nicotero wishing Storyworthy a very happy 5th anniversary. Wow, both my marriages didn't last 5 years.
Hey, this is Maggie Roswell from The Simpsons. Happy 5th anniversary! Or as Miles Flanders would say, happy 5th anniversary.
Or Miss Hoover would say, well, good, you made it to 5 years. Isn't that great?
How did Lovejoy go, my gosh, think of the children. Everyone loves them. They all do.
Happy anniversary, story worthy. Happy anniversary, story worthy. It's Lee Keckner. Happy anniversary and keep up the good work.
Hey, this is Yakov Smirno wishing story worthy happy 5th anniversary. If Mark Maron was as good looking as Christine Blackburn, he'd get an interview with the Pope.
Story-worthy Media, the best in story-driven content.
This is Adam Carolla, and you are listening to Story-Worthy.
Welcome to the Story Worthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finney.
Welcome to Story Worthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finney, and we're coming to you from the Adam Carolla Studios in not quite beautiful downtown Glendale.
You know what I like most about this studio, Hannes?
What?
It's 4.2 miles from my house.
Yeah, I live in beautiful North Hollywood, the home, the ancestral home of Adam Carolla. They actually have a plaque there. And so this is great. We usually record in Culver City. And by the way, this is what actual soundproofing sounds like.
Yeah. We're celebrating our 5-year anniversary, and our guest tonight is the one and only Adam Carolla.
Which is good, because otherwise he would throw our asses out of here.
Now listen, you and I both know, Hannes, Adam is a big impetus for me to start this show.
Yeah, literally, without him, you would have never had this idea.
Well, no, I probably wouldn't have. And it was after, you know, his radio show ended, and then he got to the podcast, and then my wheel started turning. And
he started to build his empire.
Very specifically, April 2010. So anyway, we're excited. And so 5 years later, here we are. All right, you guys, we're going to get right to our guest.
Yeah, we're dispensing
tonight
with our usual bullshit to get right to Mr. Carolla.
Well,
oh, yes.
I will say that the topic tonight, the name of the episode is...
Closets, closets, closets. We don't know. It could
be
anything.
Closets, closets, closets.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Here we go. Adam Carolla, you guys, as you know, he's a well-known radio and television host, a comedian and an actor. And you know him from, and I'm going to list these, Hannes, because this just is very impressive.
Hang on, I may need a nap.
It's very
impressive. Because it's a long list.
You may know him from Loveline with Dr. Drew, The Man Show, Crank Yankers, Dancing with the Stars. Some people don't know that. Celebrity Apprentice. And then, of course, his own shows, To Catch a Contractor, CarCast, and The Adam Carolla Show. He also is the author of the New York Times bestseller, In 50 Years, We'll All Be Chicks, which I have on my iPhone. I might have him sign. Can you have somebody sign your Kindle? Is that
I don't think that you can yet, but that technology is coming. When that app comes, that guy's going to be a billionaire.
Also, Not Taco Bell Material and President Me, and he has a
you
new
You brought
book,
the actual book, so he will be able
book,
to sign
I'm
it if he so
my
desires.
Right hand. Called Daddy Stop Talking. And you can find Adam, of course, on iTunes and at AdamCarolla.com and on Twitter at Adam Carolla. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for the one and only Adam Carolla.
Thank you. My son, who's on the cover of that book, is about 60 feet away from where we are, sitting nicely, if you'd like
oh,
to
he's here today.
Say hi to
Sonny. Absolutely.
Who's here. Came with Daddy to work today, yes. Well, let's see. I think this would have been about 1989. I was working at a place called ABC Closets, Always Better Closets, and still here in Burbank. And I say here because we're right on the border of Burbank. And I was working there with a bunch of born-again gangbangers. And this guy believed in rehabbing and rejuvenating the folks that, you know, at some point 9 months earlier had shoved a Phillips head screwdriver into the neck of somebody who asked him to do something. And he believed in second chances. But, you know, they never really talk about the people who have to work with the people who believe in second chances. Like they go, you know, hey, we got to take these inner city gangbangers. We got to give them a gig. And I get, that's great. You're in the office all day, but I got to go out in the field with these guys. And they're born again, and I imagine they found Jesus in prison. It seemed like that's where he hangs. I mean, I don't know that he lives in prison. I'm not saying Jesus is incarcerated. I'm saying if you want to find him, that's where he'll be. It's like, I don't know, for some people it's the Trader Joe's closest to their house, you know. Where's Roy? I don't know. I'll bet he's at the Trader Joe's over there in Pasadena, though. If he's not here, well, that's kind of how it is with Jesus, you know. Where's Jesus? I don't know. He's not in this studio. Probably in some prison nearby. So they found Jesus Christ there, and then when they got out, they shared the good news with this atheist about Jesus Christ. We would pray a lot, ask for traveling mercy, which I didn't know you could do. For me, that's a jinx when you're thumping a Bible and asking not to get into an accident as you're backing down the driveway. I'm just an ironic guy. I think that means that's the time the UPS truck T-bones you, right? But anyway, we're asking for traveling mercy and driving throughout the Southland, installing closets. It's kind of it's a sort of depressing job in that, you know, it I don't know. It's like a single heavy set woman in her 50s who's never been married or gone to the prom, and her job is making ice sculptures for weddings. You know, it's like it's ironic. It's depressing. You know, even though it seems good. So I would go to people's houses who are like Beverly, you know, people had enough money to sink $8,000 into a closet. And you know, I rode a motorcycle at an apartment with three roommates. I worked with born again gangbangers. I didn't have air conditioning, but my day job was to be at Candy Spelling's house putting a closet in, you know. And it was always ironic because the closets were 10 times as nice as my apartment, and it was their closet. But this particular instance, I went solo. I was told I was going alone to install a closet. So instead of taking the big cube truck, I just took the van. And I was told when I was handed the invoice that I needed to collect the money and give the invoice to the homeowner, which is something I rarely did. We normally went into the home, installed the closet, and left. And the invoice and the deposit and the design and all that was sort of paperwork that was that the office did, but not that we handled. We just did the installation. But in this particular case, I was handed an invoice and told where I had to go and the money I had to collect. And I looked at the invoice, and I just remember saying, oh, that's my street. I know. Wow. This, what a coincidence. That's my street. And now here's where the problem started. This is the beginning of the problem. My street. I went all through high school and a year of junior college living on Hartsook Street in North Hollywood. And the next street over is Otsego Street, which were was my now and then. Then my first apartment on Laurel and Otsego, and I basically grew up off of Laurel and Hartsook Street. So when I said, oh, that's my street, somewhere between the drive from Burbank to what turned out to be Otsego Street, I had screwed up and flip-flopped my street with my old street. So the street I'm living on now was, in my mind, my street, but it went turned out was anyway. So I had about 5-6 years in this one house living in the garage with my dad and stepmom. And then later on, I had a couple of years living in this apartment one street over. So obviously the my street part is there's plenty of it's open for a lot of interpretation and miscommunication. And it's something I never even thought of. Although I must have known because my mom lived at 11752 Houston Street in North Hollywood. And when my parents got divorced, my dad eventually moved into 11752 Hartsook Street, which was sort of convenient to my, you know, less than ample brain back then. I never forgot the address. I always thought it was ironic they lived the exact same address 5 streets away. But anyway, I thought you were supposed to go to Florida and get as far away as you possibly could from your ex. But anyway, I went to the address on Otsego Street, and I knocked on the door. And again, I was just looking at the invoice and just looking at the address because the rest was math that I'd already done in my head. And I knocked on the door, and I think we used to call them Spanish maids back then. Now, Now they're just squatty chicks from Guatemala. But back then we called them Spanish maids. I don't know. It's sort of noble. They might, probably even had outfits back then. But anyway, the Spanish maid answered the door. She was holding an infant. And I had two things going for me. I had a toolbox under one hand and a lot of personal momentum, which I believe if you have that personal momentum, you can walk right in the front door of the White House and do whatever you want. I mean, literally, there's nothing that can stop you when you're not doubting yourself. Like, I always have this theory that I think you could steal about anything if you didn't know it. Like, you could walk into any store and grab any piece of electronics or an apple off a cart or whatever. If you truly didn't know it, like you truly were distracted or trying to get a price on it and then your phone rang, you could just walk out to your car and leave if you had enough. But we're also full of insecurity and doubt. We'd flop sweat. We'd be, you know, who's the guy sweating through his shirt, looking over his shoulder all the time? Who's the junkie on aisle 9, you know? So she just looked at me. And she just went like, you know, porque, or something. And I just said, out of the way. I'm installing the closet. And she got out of the way. So she figured, obviously, there's something she didn't know. Yeah. And the owners of the homes were not, the home were not there. I'm assuming, I always just assume that the parents were working and she was there looking after the infant. And I walked in and I walked right to the master bedroom. And again, this should have been one of those things. I opened the closet door and it was filled with gowns and shoes and every long hanging, double hanging, everything. And I thought, God damn it, that we always tell them to clean out the goddamn closet before we show up. But every once in a blue moon, they screw the pooch and they forget about it. And you don't want to see what your closet looks like unloaded in an angry fashion. Like this unloaded with malice, you know what I mean? Like ripping stuff off. It all went onto the bed. Everything just went onto the bed. And, you know, that's what you get when you don't clean your closet out. And then popped off the old knotty pine shelf and pole, they would call it. And popped off the baseboard in there and proceeded to install the new closet. Now, people will ask, well, how did your custom closet fit inside this existing space when, in fact, you're at the wrong house? The answer to that is simple. Every house in the San Fernando Valley was built, you know, between like 1951 and 1963. Like all those, the houses one street over in North Hollywood have about the same footprint and floor plan. The master bedrooms, you could hardly call it a master bedroom, but they're all the same. They all have the same closet. They're about 2 feet deep. They're like 7 foot wide. Some of them have the bifolding, you know, louver doors. Some have the mirror doors. But not only did the closet fit, but we always would leave the last bay of the closet to be sort of an accordion where I would cut the pole on the job site. And so it could be 32 inches or it could be 28 inches. We didn't have to measure it out exactly because we had some play in the very last bay. And so that's what I did. And I installed a closet. And I also remember installing bathrobe hooks. They wanted bathrobe hooks. And they said, in the master bathroom, there was three big chrome hooks that were pre-mounted on a piece of what would be either melamine or corian or something, or whatever prefab, pre-vinyl coated that we would edge band and then we would screw it to the door. And so that's what I did. And Cortron or melamine is what you would use. And then I would have left, and I was leaving. I packed up my tools, I put them in a van, and I did recall that I had to get paid. And normally, I would have just been down the road and heading back to beautiful, smoggy, sunny Burbank. But I said I need a check to the Spanish maid, who did not speak any much English, hence the the title of Spanish Maid. And I said, I need some dinero. And she said, no. I said, a check. Someone must have left you a check. It was discussed. My boss told you, leave the check. No check. I said, dinero, no, come on. It's around here somewhere, right? They talked to the owner, and my boss told me the owner had the check, was left there, you know, pick up the check. No, and I was showing her the invoice. Like, look, here's the amount. Here's the amount I need, the invoice. And she looked at the invoice, and she said, And she walked over to the by the front door, and she grabbed a piece of mail. Yeah. And she grabbed the piece of mail, and she's like, look. And I was like, yeah, there it is. 1-1-7-4-9. She go, well, we're on it, aren't we? And then she started pointing at my invoice. It said Hartsook Street. And I was like, it's always the worst. I tell everyone, I think it's the worst part of life that the worst part of life is the discovery. Like, it's not the part, like, you think about it. If you ever discover your car is stolen, it's not the pre-discovery part, because that means you still own a Camry. And in the post-discovery part, you're in kind of, I got to call the insurance company, I got to call the cops. Like, you're in a business mode. You know, I got to take care of this. That moment of, like, I parked it right under the palm tree, right? There's the, you know, it's got the transmission fluid link that always looks like Abe Lincoln's head right there. Like, yeah, this is where, this is, you have that moment, like, the car's, Now, 8 seconds later, you're fine. You're into, I got to call the insurance guy, and I'm going to argue with somebody, or woe is me, or whatever it is, but it's not that painful, like, I was looking at this invoice, and I was just like, yeah, 1-1-7-5. And I just, like, looked up, and I just went, like, and she just went, like, and I was like, oh, shit. I grabbed the I'm not proud of this, but I grabbed the cordless drill. I put on reverse. I started running for the closet to back out every screw. The things were all, like, modular. You could, like, snap them together and screw them together. I started backing everything out. She started running for the kitchen with the child now, like, extra cradled and protecting the child. And she was calling, I imagine, the owners of the house at work or somewhere. And it was pre-cell phone days. So only Dan Tana from Vegas actually had a cell phone back then. And that was wired to his car. But he kept his car inside his house. So kind of was a home phone. I got to work this out. Anyway, There it was, and I backed out every screw, threw everything into the van like a coward, ran back like the Grinch that stole Christmas, you know, took the bathrobe hooks off the bathrobe, took everything, and jumped in the van and took off. I couldn't go too far because I could only go one street over to the exact same address. It's not like I could flee to Mexico or anything. So my escape route was just go up, turn right, go to the next street, turn right, go back 100 feet and park there. But I also knew, I was like, it was literally one street over at the exact same address. I was like, probably from the backyard, it's probably like 100 feet away from where the crime had gone down. I, to this day, still have no idea whatever happened, whoever happened. I have no idea what she told the owners. I have no idea what the owners could have made of what happened, but that was me installing a closet in the wrong house.
That's best to catch a contractor ever.
Yeah.
It's like in reverse.
Yeah.
I have one question. Did you, okay, you reversed everything, you got it out. Did you then put the clothes back or the baseboard back or anything? Did you leave the clothes in an angry pile?
No, I left them in the angry pile. And it's because she panicked and went for the phone. And
yeah.
I knew I was on the clock. Like, I didn't know if she was calling the cops or calling an angry homeowner who, you know, had a license to carry a concealed weapon.
Do you think she was afraid of you? Do you think she was scared?
At that point,
she was.
Suddenly,
I think she was afraid of the situation. I don't know if it was me, but she grabbed the kid with kind of both arms and hightailed it.
I could respect that, though. I could respect her.
No, she's like, okay, this guy is either like, she probably might have been like, what are you, on drugs that you could make this mistake? It's like suddenly she knows you're not supposed to be there.
Strange man,
Strange man in the house. Yeah.
Yes. And obviously a capable man. A man is able
a man with tools.
To install a closet and remove a closet.
Were there other bedrooms you could have chosen from? How did you know to go to that bedroom?
In those little valley houses, which I sort of grew up in a succession of those little valley houses, they just pretty much had one master bedroom. It was always seemed to be when you walk in the front door, you'd sort of jog to the left and walk down a hall and it'd be at the end.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, and it was, you know, it was 12 by 9 versus everyone else who had a 8x8
Is that
bedroom,
like a shotgun,
you know?
House? Have you heard that? No, is that
it's
the
just
term
like a standard rent. I live in that neighborhood now and I know exactly what you mean. This is like, they don't look exactly the same, but they look like brothers. They look related. They're so close to being the same house.
Yeah.
Endless same house, same house.
Yeah. Yeah. They're like the Swayze brothers. You know, they're not quite exactly the same, but you can definitely tell that.
Hey, the Baldwin brothers, Alex is the nice mansion. You know,
yeah,
Billy's the one.
Now, the reality is now that those homes, many of them at a certain point sold for $700,000 or $800,000 because of the whole crazy economy and whatever went on with housing and then, you know, the balloon and all that kind of stuff. But a lot of them have been modified quite a bit because somebody pays $800,000 or $900,000 for a house does not want to live in the piece of shit I put.
So
the
they usually
in.
Go up, right?
They go up
the second, third, fourth story.
Yeah, I mean, they don't let them go by code higher than two, but it just looks like they built another box that was the same shape on top of the house that was
right.
there.
And then they can put a deck on that, so they could be like a rooftop deck.
I don't want to argue with you, but...
No, go ahead, argue.
I think he would probably win.
They normally would just, and again, there's a code, there's a height code, and whatever it is, I mean, from the millions that I've seen, they just like look like, they usually put a big master bedroom on top there with a big wall of stucco that faces the street with like one window that's way too small and the sea of stucco, and they'll put a... like a gable-y kind of roof on it with a little pitch or something on it. But they'll build the crap out of the backyard. It's like, how do we get a... We're living in $1 million house, and our friends who come over from Utah are like, what the fuck?
They got a spread.
We get like a moat in Anchorage. Yeah. And
back in Milwaukee,
acreage,
where I'm from, $1 million, you have a house on Lake Michigan with lakefront property.
Right.
And here you're...
You're living in a shitbox.
Now, your show, To Catch a Contractor, heading into its third season.
Yes, currently.
And
I
understand it's now 60 minutes. It was 30 minutes, so now it's longer.
Yes.
That's exciting.
Yeah, it is. I mean, not for me, but for other people might be. No, it's look, we're living in a crazy wild west of entertainment that if you get your show picked up for a second season and then a third season and they're soliciting victims for the fourth season, you know, it's a victory.
I've
been lucky. I knew a lot of success. I've had plenty of stuff that didn't work. I've had some one and done. I've done some pilots that never got off the ground, you know, so I do understand that in this town of, you know, anytime you're going on your 40th or 50th episode, or if they've extended you from a half hour to an hour long, or you're even on a network that someone has heard of.
Yeah, of course.
You know, we don't know what that's like.
Now, it's on Spike TV.
TV. Yeah, that's a victory these days.
And you're working with such capable people. I mean, like that guy Skip that you work with. He seems like he really has his shit together.
Yeah, Skip knows his business. He did it for a living. He does it for a living. I did it for a living. I do it for a living. Not for a living, but I do it out of just a sort of passion for it. A lot of it is necessity.
You're building your empire, literally. I mean, you did this warehouse. You do your house. You do another house. And
right. I build the studio we're in. You know,
right.
So I end up... overseeing, planning, doing, you know, it's a lot of, I don't know, people are douchey about it sometimes because they're like, oh, you built this studio? And I go, that's my douche voice, right? And I go, yeah, I I built the studio. I go, you built it alone or you had somebody help?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I
went to Home Depot and got
Do it myself. I got my guys together. Yeah. I laid it out. I snapped the lines. So I used a bunch of metal stud. I designed
it. Fantastic.
I built a double wall. I know that's a timely door frame and blah, blah, blah. I used to do commercial work too. But no, I did not turn and sink every screw. No, I didn't put the primer on. I could have.
Yeah.
I'm busier than
but
that.
But at this point in your life, you may as well get some people to help you out.
Yeah, you do it that way.
Can I ask you a contractor question?
Yes.
I wasn't going to ask this, but I live in one of those apartments in North Hollywood, built in, I believe, 1950.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a perfectly nice building except for one thing. There are like two circuit breakers. Apparently there are two circuits. I don't know anything. And if you have the toaster oven and the thing on the same breaker, it goes off and you have to go throw the circuit breaker.
Yeah.
And they say, well, you know, the wiring's from 1950. It isn't built for this kind of stuff. And I always think, you're not charging 1950 rent.
Right.
So is there anything that they could do? Can you update the wiring in a building like that? Or is that just too, you'd have to tear out the whole thing?
Well, what they need to do is step up the amperage on the panel. Like the service, you know, the problem.
I'm writing this down.
Yeah, the problem with these things is, you know, back to the aforementioned crappy McMansions we were talking about.
Yeah.
Those things came with like maybe 100 amp service, and you know, amps are pretty much like. You can collect and trade them. They're like, you know, well, you have an oven. It's an electric oven. All right. That's on a dedicated 20-amp circuit. All right. Remove 20 from our 100 amps. Now we're down to 80 to play with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The dishwasher's a big draw.
The hair dryer seems
is a big draw.
Oh, the hair dryer is a nightmare.
So we
well,
will
lucky
have.
For you don't have to worry about that.
Lucky me, exactly.
We'll have, but the hair draw, the hair dryer, I'm thinking about draw and amperage. The hair dryer is not a dedicated circuit.
Interesting.
That'll be, but now maybe the bathroom, which should be a GFI, a ground force interrupt circuit, the kind you pop in and pop out.
You don't have to tell me.
No. I always wondered what that was. Thank you.
Yeah, ground fault, sorry. Ground fault interrupt. Any outlets within, it used to be like 6 foot of a water source, now 3 foot. Now it's just like any outlets in the kitchen, any outlets in the bathroom have to be the GFI.
I see.
Or GFCI or whatever we'll call them. But the point is this. So your problem.
I have so many.
Your problem. Yeah, I know. This is the tip of the iceberg. Your problem here is that the whole panel needs to be upgraded because now you're saying, well, I want to run air conditioning. And, you know, you get back to this McMansion we're talking about. Well, the guy wants a pool in the backyard. He's got $1 million house. Yeah. He wants to put a pool in. All right. Well, now he's got pool equipment. Mm-hmm. That's a big draw.
Yeah.
We want to put in a couple of units and have air conditioning throughout, you know, central air. That's a bigger. Well, these panels were made to handle Lucy and Ricky's apartment. You know what I mean? And the biggest draw.
Fred Mertz would plug the thing in and the spark would go. Yeah.
Yeah. The toaster and the hairdryer are the biggest draw formerly. Now you're trying to get air conditioning and other things going, surround sound system or whatever it is. And these things were really just predated
just
all
wasn't
that
meant
stuff.
For that.
So the panel outside with the circuit breakers, they could redo that and everybody in the building would be happy.
Yes, they could.
I mean, they could. Not that it's that easy, but I'm saying it's easier than tearing the wiring.
They need to, at some point, take that service and step it up, just like people in the same houses from the 50s or the 60s in the same neighborhoods need to go from 100 amp to a 200 amp. And if you have a bigger house, you need a 400 amp service, you know, so you can sort of.
Thank you.
Yeah, you do.
Seriously,
I'm
very excited about this information.
You can do the math pretty easily and just sort of back out the math with the fridge, that's 20 amps, and that's on its own circuit, and the garbage disposal's its own.
Yeah,
you know.
I think
we'll
it's like
do that,
the little right. the little extra, yeah, like you said, 20, you know, 20, that leaves you 80. It's like there's literally like 10 amps to work with.
Because
if you have more than two things on, the whole thing goes down.
So you're exceeding it, so you're going, all right, now then I'm not going to make this toaster strudel when you're blowing your hair, so it's going to be one or the other.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, on a slightly more just sort of half-assed, you know, but semi-practical way to do it is you can just get one of those, you know, breaker plug-in bar switch things, you know, computer, you know, surge protector things or whatever. Just plug your crap into that, and then at least when it goes, it goes.
It goes right there.
Right there.
I don't have to put my shoes on, go outside.
Right. When you do a show like To Catch a Contractor, do you feel, I'm not kidding, do you feel good about, like, helping people? Because you're really helping a lot of people.
I know.
Isn't that weird?
It's so sad. I don't have that gene.
But you are.
I know. It's funny. I think I was talking to my wife or something about this the other day. She said, that's really nice. I mean, there you are. You give them the house back. Everyone's crying and hugging.
It's very emotional.
And it is. And it
affects you in no way whatsoever.
No way, shape, or form.
I totally understand.
She said, like, it must feel great. And I said,
that's what I think, too.
I wish it did. And she's like,
interesting.
But it's got to feel good, right? And I'm like, it doesn't feel like anything. And she's like, well, what's it feel like? And I'm like, it feels like I got to get back to, like, when I'm leaving that day.
Yeah.
I'm going from there to come here to do a podcast, and like in between, I'm working on a book. And so my wife's like, yeah, but doesn't that feel great? And I'm like, I don't allow myself that luxury. I'm into, I got to go do the podcast.
There's a difference. So you don't see a difference in entertaining people and then actually helping people? Because even on like with Dr. Drew on
Love Line, I didn't even look at entertaining as helping people or doing it.
Somebody has to. Somebody has to gather the food and somebody entertains around the fire.
I got to say, I have played, you know, the Moore Theater in Seattle with 2,000 seats, had a great 90-minute set. Everyone was laughing. When I walk off stage, it's like it never happened.
Wow.
And it can go bad. If it goes bad, I'm not happy. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not a person that does not feel negativity. Mm-hmm. I just don't feel that much positivity. So,
I totally wish I didn't understand that, but I do. Yeah, you can go down, but you can only go up so high.
Well, I'm there to entertain these 2,000 people and give them their money's worth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And when I do that, then all I did was accomplish my goal.
Yeah.
And I don't feel any different than the guy who puts the new muffler on your Buick feels like.
You're on to the next thing.
A great sense of satisfaction. I was like, no, that's what I'm here to do. Like, and I am, but it's sad. Yeah.
So it is sad.
I should feel better.
You are obviously very busy. You have so many projects going on. Do you ever do anything you don't want to do?
I'm doing this show.
I know. I swear to God, I stepped into that.
You really? You had to throw that softball up? I barely wanted to drive over here.
That was like unlimited.
My day off.
That was unlimited arc softball.
I know.
Playing with the Chicago-style ball.
It's just like big, huge balls.
You had the Nerf bat.
I had to keep
it. It was like full amperage. You had all the amperage
you needed. Waiting and waiting for it to come down. No, that's everything I do, I don't want to do most of the time.
That's not true. I don't believe you.
Half the time. Well, no. Here's what I like. The God's honest for me. I like building.
Yeah, you use your hands.
Yeah, but people don't understand going to crap box houses
in Tustin
with poor families that have been screwed, and going into some little crappy bathroom that some contractor effed up royally. No, that's not what I want to build a studio. I want to build an envelope house, it's called, which is a super high energy efficiency house.
You're talking about that. What is an envelope house?
Yeah, it's like triple pane windows. Everything is sealed. Everything, the R value is how they measure, like R13 insulation, R16 insulation. The R value is how you rate everything thermally and stuff. You waste nothing.
Huh.
It has a big air exchange unit. It's always like 70 degrees. There's no dust inside. It sounds, there's no circuit breakers popping.
I'm just thinking about how we try and close the windows in our 1950 apartment. It's like there's a crack that a walrus could come through.
Yeah,
and
I know.
Like, Hannes, how much you guys pay for that place? Seriously.
What do you pay? About
$1,500 a month.
Yeah, a little bit more.
A little bit more.
Yeah,
it is a house. I mean, so there is that.
Well, it's not a house. It's a 2-bedroom apartment with a little yard. Used to be the manager's apartment, so it's the only one with a tiny, tiny little yard.
And
the manager, by the way, has been dead for 40 years. That's how old this building is.
Well, yeah. So I like building. I like race cars, and I like building cars, and I like all things mechanical.
I know,
and I
tell you, I was watching on YouTube some footage of you in a race car. And here's two questions. Don't laugh at me.
Okay.
Is there ever a race car where there's a passenger seat?
Yes. It's not funny. I mean, it's not. I would never make fun of you. Amongst other things, I would, but not with this. No, well, two things. Rally cars all have navigators. So most rally cars have a passenger seat for the navigator who's navigating while the other person is driving.
Except in the kind of cars you drive, it's about weight, right?
So yeah, they don't have any. Yeah.
There's no wiggle room.
The rally cars are, they go on and on, and they're going from city to city through the
countryside. Yeah, and the cars I drive are all stripped down to nothing. They look like cages inside. So there's sheet metal.
So have you ever driven really fast with your kid in the car? Either of your kids in the car?
In a race car?
I mean, if there were to be a passenger seat.
What's the fastest your kid has ever gone, I guess?
No, I'll definitely have fun with my kids. The race car, you can't, there's no place. Where the passenger side seat would be, it's sheet metal in a cage.
Yeah.
So you couldn't even
sit. There's no seat.
There's nothing to do. You know, you'd have your kids removed by Child Protective Services.
Child Services and NASCAR together.
Yeah.
I used to live up in the hills, and there was a long hill that went from like Lake Hollywood up to the top, and there was no side streets or anybody around.
Yeah.
And it's just one long straight shot. And we'd go down to the bottom, turn around and say, hang on, and just blast all the way up the hill because they love the sensation of being pushed back into the seat.
That makes me a little sick to my stomach.
They come to the races with
Don't worry, your Subaru will never make this kind of speed. Your Subaru wagon from 1989.
You're a lesbian. The races, they come out to the races with me, and they help, you know, I make them
the pit crew, and
they help, you know, clean the car and stuff like that.
But they're not going to be, obviously, you're not going around the freeways of L.A. with those children in the car.
Well, as far as the race cars go, people have no idea that, you know, they'll say, like, well, but you can drive them on the street or you can't start them up. I mean, the windows will blow out of the neighboring houses.
Yeah.
Like, first off, you want to scare yourself to start one of those cars and just stand outside of it, and it'll frighten you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's no, and they're so low to the ground that you couldn't even get them out the driveway and onto the street. When we bring them in here, we have to put ramps.
And the tires are the wrong. You can't go on the street.
They're like gummy.
The whole Paul Walker thing was like, it was the tires that.
Oh, was it?
That's what they said. It's like they were slick tires.
For that speed, we hit some water.
They're driving on a regular in a parking lot, and you can't control it. It's a regular car. Well, it's completely different. The tires are different. Everything about it was different.
Yeah. Now, what he was driving was a Carrera GT Porsche that was a street car that is about as racy as you get for a street car.
Right.
But the cars I'm talking about are just full cages.
And your new sponsor is Mazda?
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, it's...
All I have is Datsuns.
I'm just not clear. Like, so they own the car?
No.
How does that shake down? What does it mean to be sponsored by Mazda?
Well, I own all the race cars. Mm-hmm. I own all the cars.
Are you like Jay Leno car guy all the way up there?
Is anyone at that
nobody,
level? He's got hundreds.
Nobody.
Right?
Yeah, nobody's that. I'm that with vintage race cars and maybe Paul Newman vintage race cars. But I may have the most amount of Paul Newman race cars.
Wow. How many of his cars do you have?
Eight.
That is so fascinating.
Do you have...
Where do you get a Paul Newman race car?
I'll give you for instance. I spoke to my guy today. My guy's in Long Island. He's got a Paul Newman race car from 1990, and it's in the back of my trailer that's hooked up to my Ford F-350 dually diesel, and he's leaving Long Island
right now,
and he's driving this car with all these parts and spares and molds for
that's
the fenders
awesome.
And all that junk.
Do you love other things about Paul Newman? I mean, because when I think of him and I think about his salad dressing, his popcorn, his blue eyes, Butch Cassidy.
No, but like, he actually went into racing full bore. He didn't play with it. He was
he won,
I'm done with being a movie star.
Yeah, he won four national championships.
Wow.
And was pretty successful and did it. It was his passion.
Do you happen to have one of those? I think it's not a race car, but he would put a racing engine in a boxy, crappy Volvo station wagon.
No,
I know he gave
I don't.
One to David Letterman. It's like,
yeah.
Did he do more than two of those?
He had a couple, and I had seen the guy who has his boxy Volvo wagon with the supercharged. I think it's a Ford. Sorry, it's a Ford supercharged Ford V8 in it. That's not that part of it. I'm not that interested in. For some
where
reason,
where he's just sort of playing. Yeah.
I want to go race. Like, yeah. I want to take his car.
So let's talk about CarCast for a second. Are you trying to kind of replicate what? Who are those guys? Mike and Tom, or wait, who? Car Talk. Is it like that then? Car Talk.
Yeah, I guess so.
CarCast.
I mean, it's cars and humor.
But it's
a couple of guys.
But it's for basic consumers. It's not a race car show.
No, but if I go out and do the Monterey Historics at Mazda Raceway, some people call it Laguna Seca. It's in up north. I think Mazda wants to call it.
Oh, wait, no, in Monterey?
Yeah.
I camped there last. There's a camping ground.
That's a crazy sentence.
In
right
the
there.
Center of
you never
the.
Camp. Are
right,
you
I never camp, first of all. And so we go up there.
One could argue
like,
when he goes home, it's camping with all the circuits
know, no
and the air blowing through there.
I know. There's stuff going by.
I would look at that as camping.
My fiance, she's like, hey, I reserved a campsite. And we get there, and it's a completely – we're like, why are we in an empty racetrack?
Mm-hmm.
And we're like that's like three people camping. It was just some weird week. And it was just like you could camp and have people going 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And that's what happens when they have the big race there. It was completely insane. I'd never
really
heard of
funny.
It before.
Yeah, everybody or a lot of people make the pilgrimage out there and they camp not in the infield in this particular case, but around the racetrack,
is it
around
like
the perimeter
Burning
of
Man
it.
Burning Man for car races?
It's Burning Rubber,
it
man.
It was pretty awesome, though, because
yeah.
You look down and you're like, if there was, I'm looking down, I'm going, there's nothing happening. But if something was happening, I could see what it is. It's fantastic.
Well, that's why they come out. It's a big – they bring maybe 500 or 600 cars every year.
Wow.
It's a huge event.
That's huge.
Can I ask you – this is just it's just one of the things you're not allowed to make fun of me for. Totally. Go ahead. Did you like Speed Racer when you were a kid?
Yes,
when
I
you
loved
said
Speed
Rally
Racer.
Navigator, I thought of Speed Racer immediately.
And
I loved Speed Racer.
The original cartoon.
Yeah, with Hojo, right? Oh, wait.
Spridle and Chim Chim.
Chim Chim, sure.
Then there was Pops.
Pops Racer.
Then there was Inspector Detector. Then
and of course, Racer X.
And there was Trixie, his girlfriend.
Trixie, that whore.
What a whore. She's easy on the eyes, though, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And then there was Racer X, which is his brother, who he didn't know was his actual brother.
Right, exactly.
Stole a car from Pops, raced before 16th
I like how
birthday.
His father's first name is Pops. That's one of the things that I really
I think the
like.
Mom's name was just Mom, too.
I don't even remember Mom.
Well, there was a mom. She would disapprove of Spridle's. Spridle, such a weird name.
Yeah.
Spridle and Chim Chim.
Listen,
sorry.
I love your new book. I
we
really
could talk
do.
About
and
that forever.
Probably because I also have an 8-year-old and your mm-hmm. twins, of course. This is written for mm-hmm. your twins.
Mm-hmm.
But come on. Your kids can't read this book, dude, for
no.
like until they're like 30. I mean,
well,
no.
I'll
I
just
mean,
be dead.
Like 18. No, 16.
I'll just, whenever I die, they
there's
can read
a
the
lot
book.
Of raw material in here
mm-hmm.
about masturbation,
mm-hmm.
About sex.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but kids already know more than you think they
oh
do,
my
anyhow.
God. Well,
you know, it, sometimes they'll hear, I mean, any parent, they'll hear the parents talking when you think they can't hear that you.
No, we don't even yeah. try anymore.
Yeah.
But there are
exactly.
so many laugh out loud moments in this book.
I tell my wife to keep the racist stuff to a dull
keep
roar.
Keep it a low roar. Exactly.
We tell you what we got to do. I'm like, come on now.
You're married to Amy Schumer? Oh, see, why did I? I went right there.
There's a
why
lot of laugh out loud moments in the
worse.
Book. There
yeah,
really
thank
is.
You.
And it doesn't, of course, it's not for parents. I mean, it is for parents. You could be a parent, but you could read this book and not be a parent, clearly,
yeah,
and be
yeah.
entertained.
Yeah. Every book I write, you come up with a structure to facilitate your jokes,
mm-hmm.
So it's like you're just building this ship that you can put your jokes on and set sail with it. And then sometimes it looks like a Viking ship and sometimes it looks like a cruise ship, well, whatever it is. But it could be a Hobie cat when you don't have a lot of jokes.
A Hobie cat.
It'd be the Contiki Tiki as you cross
right.
the ocean.
That's my favorite catamaran for sure.
Yeah, but
you know, people always kind of want to discuss the shape of the boat. It's really, the boat's really just there to hold the ideas and the jokes, you know. Yeah. And so, you know, President Me or Taco, not Taco Bell material, you know, these are structures that are put there to then hold the story.
And yeah, they all have adequate amperage. Yeah. That's what's important. Yeah.
I love the title, Not Taco Bell Material. I mean, I just like that somebody said that to you.
Yeah.
My friend Annabelle Gerwich, and I think she did your show before, mm-hmm. her book, I See You Made an Effort, was, mm-hmm. you know, she went into her hairdresser, and he looks at her and he goes, oh, hey, Annabelle, I see you made an effort. He was totally serious.
Yeah.
And it's just like that. I think that's very humorous.
Compliments.
Yeah, I know.
And so in the book, of course, you talk about your children, and I wanted to ask you, because I have an 8-year-old as well, like I said. Do you force them to do anything, like any kind of sports, swimming, Cub Scouts?
No, I don't force them to do anything.
Are there chores, allowance?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, brush your teeth and, you know, finish your food.
That's
or whatever.
That's not a chore.
No. I mean, we're falling under the, you
That's
know,
a
we're,
rule.
We're
look
we're,
at my teeth. That's a
we're,
chore.
We're looking for things. I do tell them to do things.
Okay.
Such as brush your teeth, put your pajamas on, you know, that stuff. But in terms of, like, their life, they have a life that's just filled with activities and clubs and, you know.
And your daughter wants a lazy river.
She wants a lazy river. And, you know, what I do with them is I try to incorporate them into my life and work and things of that nature. So what I do is I say, look, we're going to work on this new house. We're going to go there, measure the property. I want to measure the backyard. You guys are going to help me measure it. We're going to write it down. You know, then we're going to come back. We're going to measure our yard. We're going to figure out the square footage, you know.
It's great. And they're learning that whole time.
Yeah. And I tell my daughter, you know, okay, go get a magazine with pictures or go on the internet, find pictures that you like of houses that you think are cool. And then we're going to cut those pictures out. We're going to put them on a board and we're going to lay it out, you know. And it's not like... I really don't. Yes.
No, you're just making me think of the secret, you know, with the dream thing where you put on the board what you want, the house and the car. But in this case, it's like you're literally making that come to life. It's like, put up the picture of the house you want. Daddy will actually build it.
Yeah.
For once, it's actually going to happen. It never happens.
I'm attempting to have a more sort of tangible, practical experience, you know.
I bring them
with me to events. I do. I brought my son with me to do a corporate event, you know.
That's just one of those great memories.
But be with dad and see what he does.
But you know, you talk about in the book that you have to kind of simulate a childhood for your kids that's not privileged, because they are in that, you know, 1%, your children.
Oh, for sure. And they have a much better life than I do. I mean, that's for sure.
So does my kid. For that matter.
Yeah. My dog has a much better life than I do. She's home sleeping by some air conditioning vent right now, you know.
Right. So, you're out here talking to a couple of schmucks. I mean,
yeah. Jesus. I mean, it's painful. But no, I mean, honestly, people say, how much money do you need? And I go, when I can live the life that my wife and my kids and my dog can live, then I'll have enough money. I have to go out and get it, you know.
Right.
I want them to... I'm not going to foist things on them. I don't think that works. Foist.
Is that a word?
Foist. To force upon.
Excellent.
Thank you.
What I'm saying is, look, whether it's their...
I went to the University of Wisconsin.
Whether it's their sexuality or whatever it is, you're not going to really talk them into or out of much. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
You're going to expose them to things.
Parents have... I mean, they have a lot more power than they can do, and they also, at the same time, have a lot less power than they think they do.
I completely agree. They are who they are.
Yeah.
You're not really going to steer the car from the back seat with them. You're going to, first off, expose them to mommy and daddy being good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, expose them to... Hey, daddy's taking care of business. Mommy and daddy get along well. And, you know, they sometimes have arguments and they work it out. They talk it out. They figure it out.
Yeah, it's what they're watching.
Yeah. Like, let
you're
them
showing
see.
Them.
Yeah, they're listening the whole time.
Oh, my son is, like I said, 60 feet away from where we are for a reason. I get him up in the morning. He's not in school right now. And he comes with me to work.
So sweet.
And we do a couple of podcasts and he hangs out. And then we walk over to the other shop and we look at some cars and we play around a little.
My girl's out in the car right now.
Got to crack the window. It's pretty hot.
Can I ask you a question? I just, this is off the topic of parenting, but I was thinking about it. How do you deal with being like, you're a public figure, you're putting out podcasts, you're putting stuff out, you're, people are constantly, especially on the internet, people are being criticized, and you've been criticized. Everybody, even we have, like, we're not famous, and people will write us letters and tell us terrible things that they heard us say. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's crazy how people feel the freedom to criticize you, so criticize one so harshly.
Yes.
Like, right, way over the top.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Like, you know, you said something I didn't like. You're a fucking horrible person. As opposed to,
yes,
I disagreed with that, which is what really happened.
Right.
You know, I mean, how do you deal with that? Because you've had to deal with that on national levels.
Well, you know, the thing that's funny, especially on a national level, is when people are like, I feel sorry for Adam's daughter and wife. And I'm like, wow.
That's tough.
Got the best goddamn lives in the world. You picked out two people that are floating in a swimming pool right now that I'm paying for.
Couldn't be happier
with
Adam.
Their nails are drying.
Oh, my wife has to plug in her Tesla twice a week. That is her biggest.
And does it blow
life.
The amperage? Never.
No, because Daddy ran 240 and a dedicated circuit out to where it is. But I love that part. My daughter is on a zip line somewhere in Catalina, while this person's going, you know who I feel sorry for?
Yeah.
Having to put up with.
That always makes me laugh. You know, look, for me, honestly, when I don't mind being called a dickhead. Look, you're not going to put your opinion out there without somebody calling you a dickhead.
Yeah.
It's impossible to be in a business of opinions, mm-hmm. which is the business we're in, mm-hmm. is the opinion business, and you're going to get called a dickhead.
Mm-hmm.
That I get. The only part for me that is tough is when I really put a lot of time into an independent film, which is, you know, years in the making, and it's a writing and funding, and, you know, it's such a Herculean
mm-hmm.
task.
Yeah.
And you put 2 or 3 years of your life into it, and then someone just sort of, sometimes
off
a critic,
cliff, just
or just very dismissively, it was a five. I've seen
a lot. You know what I liked
better.
About Road Hard?
Yeah. And they're just like, all right, so we just turned 2 years of work into,
could they not highlight the good part? Like, Road Hard looks really good.
It looks
good. The really great DP, whoever did that for you.
Yeah, it was good. His name is Morton, but he spells it with an A, M-A-R, and there's a single circle over.
What a fucking asshole.
Over his, he's Swedish.
Asshole.
So I use like a single umlaut. Morton. Yeah, the movie, well, it's like, it is,
but
one
yeah,
of
it's
these.
It's dismissed with the same veracity. Make an off the offhand joke, make a movie that takes 3 years.
Yeah,
dismissed
yeah.
in the same sentence on the internet.
Well, the thing is, yes, it looked very good. It was very professionally done. It had a lot of
really,
really good jokes in it.
It sure did.
And there was a lot of nice little moments and twists and turns. And the thing that really pissed me off when some of the critics who are going to hate me because of all the things I've said over the years, so they have a predisposition, mm-hmm. which pisses me off.
Yeah.
I wrote a really nice role for Diane Farr, who's a really good actress, who had a lot of really good dialogue and was really sort of the smart one of the group, of the couple and the love interest and blah, blah, blah. And she just got lumped in and thrown out with everything else, because if you are writing for, you know, Time Out New York or whatever, and you hate Adam Carolla, then when Adam Carolla has a movie, you have to pan it.
Yeah.
That's it. And my thing is, like, why can't you simply focus on the product? That's all, exactly. That's all I asked for. And
that must be heartbreaking for you to write a role like that and then it all to be gone.
Well, you know, I'll cry all the way back to the Jag, and then I'll drive to my $5 million house, and I'll try to get in the swimming pool.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
But,
it's
no, I mean, it's not...
You have a lazy river.
Yeah.
No, you don't.
People dying is heartbreaking.
Yeah.
This is a problem.
Well, I'll tell you what it is. What it is it's frustrating when... It's frustrating when people misrepresent, number one, you know, somebody... The Paul Newman documentary was 100% on Rotten Tomatoes.
And I was very happy with it. And then I checked one day and it was down to 89% because somebody from Toronto who writes for the local LA Weekly in Toronto doesn't like me and then wrote a bad review about a movie that gets a 97% from the 1,000 people who have watched it on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
But this asshole said no. And by the way, I just directed the film. I wasn't in it, you know, but he brought my name up like 13 times and then, you know, misquoted things and misrepresented things and miswhatevered things. And it's like, the problem with that is there is a practical problem, which is the good people of Toronto are reading a review going, oh, I guess I don't have to see this one.
And then eventually they'll see it. That happens to me. I'll like see some. There'll be something that I don't like or they advertise it badly, and I see it on Netflix. I'm like, that was a good movie. Why didn't I have any desire to see this in a theater? It happens to me all the time.
Yeah. Well, sometimes it's them. Sometimes it's the whoever's cutting the trailer. And then sometimes it's just shit review. But but yes, I don't like the unfair review.
Can I just, just reminded me, Christine, of the review you brought to my attention. We had a review on iTunes, which is, of course, not the same thing as a Toronto paper, but it's like this woman, she's like, Christine is irritating, Hannes is stupid, and he's not, and just trashed us completely.
Right.
And then, so you click on all of our other reviews, and all her reviews are, I hate the people hosting the show. If there's somebody else were hosting the show, we'd love it. And it's like, it only exists because we have the ego to create the. It's like
we wouldn't be
the
here.
Network
wouldn't
didn't
be.
Didn't cast us.
Yes.
We're desperately clawing our way
would
at it. This makes
cast you.
Every review was like, I hate this. It's like you literally hate everything the same way.
The very first review I ever got, which was devastating, or it was funny, but it was from the LA Weekly, and I was with a group called the Acme Comedy Theater.
Yeah,
and we did a show in like 1990, and it was our first review, and it said the guy who directed it was named Mark Sweeney, and the first thing it said was Mark Sweeney's bloodless conception is dead on arrival.
Oh my
so
God.
I knew it was probably wasn't going to get good after that, but
that
it went
harsh.
On to completely attack the show, and it's so sad because it's a bunch of people working for free in a little theater,
young,
you know,
at that
trying
point, young people.
And I was there that night. I remember the night. We had a good crowd, and a good house, and people were laughing. Like it was a good night, you know. And I always think the reviewers should always say, "I didn't personally enjoy this because of X, Y, and Z."
Yeah.
But that night, people were laughing. Maybe they're insane, but they never do that.
To be fair, they were people
right.
Laughing.
Yeah. So like, I don't understand what the whole audience was laughing at. That's a good sentence,
right. But. They, at a certain point in the review, and this will just show you how the reviewers work, they said the whole night was shit, but there was one good moment, and that was Adam Carolla and John McCann, and they did a bit about a couple of guys drinking beer and sort of one-upping each other and blah, blah, and then it paused and it said, good sketch comedy is not banged out on a typewriter, it's honed on the stage in the theater, meaning that's where the genesis, that's where the ideas come. You don't just, you know. Now, I learned a very valuable thing about the LA Weekly. It would never give me a good review after that, but about reviewers. Most of the bits in the show that reviewer saw were worked out on stage through improv, through the sort of process of getting one of these things up on its feet. He's got an idea. Yeah, let's work on it, blah, blah, blah. The bit that they chose to praise as the only highlight of the entire show was banged out on a typewriter and farmed out to John McCann. I literally walked in and said, John, I got an idea for a sketch.
Yeah.
You got a typewriter. Go home and write it. And he went home and wrote it, and that's how we did it.
Yeah.
So the example they give, and then they get a little preachy. Good comedies, not written, but shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
It's exactly what we did, idiot.
Yeah.
And my fantasy is to find that person, show them the review, and go, you see this? That was all written in John McCann's apartment, was never worked out on stage. Good sketch comedy is, shut up.
Yeah.
You literally.
It's exhausting.
Literally did what they said.
The exact opposite.
The exact opposite and the one bit they liked.
Adam, why are all of your producers named Mike?
I don't know.
Does it seem like
there's
that?
Some named Matt.
Yeah. Is it all M names, really?
Mike and Matt. There's a little window where everyone just went, like, I think at the hospital.
Yeah.
Like between, must have been kids that were born between, like, 1982 mm-hmm. and 1986.
They were Michaels and Matthews.
You just show up at the, I think at the hospital, if you had a boy, they went, Mike or Matt. And you went, I want to name him.
Oh, God,
Clarence.
I know. Now no, with no, all the Mike Sierras and Flynns and yeah. Ryans and shit.
Oh, my God.
All the fucking Ryans I know. God, it's irritating.
Really? I don't know that many Ryans.
I know a ton of Ryans. I know a ton. Scott. For some
I like
reason.
That name, Scott.
Like, I try to, like...
I run into Dylan's out there.
Yeah, oh, God, the Dylan... Yeah, see, that's a funny thing. It's my first name is Hannes, which no one has ever pronounced correctly, ever. My middle name, Michael.
Wow.
You
they couldn't have named me Michael Hannes Finney.
You could have changed that, man. Anytime you want
to never
change
occurred
that, flip
to me.
It around.
No,
never.
I go...
I'm from Wisconsin. I don't do things like that.
Mike... Oh, no, Mike August, the yeah. guy who books the show... is named Mike Tamarillo, but he got tired of everyone misspelling it, not good being able to pronounce it, whatever.
So and his last name?
His middle name's August. Okay. And he just said, my name's now Mike August.
I like the name August as well. It's kind of, it's solid.
You know,
I like Dan August, the TV show starring Dan, during Burt Reynolds, but that's another hope. Sorry.
I'm a Gator man myself. But...
How about BJ Novak? No, what was that? BJ Striker.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I miss us. Anyway, okay, look.
Sorry.
Sorry.
Get
sorry. Yeah. What's your point?
Here's I don't know if you know this, but they do make a good badminton kit set.
Oh, they do.
I have an excellent badminton set, and what you do is you go to Atwater Village, the Racket Doctor. And I'm a big tennis player, so I play a lot of tennis. But they also have all kinds of rackets, so for paddleball and padminton, you could get a badminton racket over there. I kid you not, from $7 to $500.
Really?
You could get, $500.
You know how you said
racket.
I would never do the
it's
wiring
like
thing? I'm never going to do that.
It's like a whip. It's really cool. And then you get the shuttlecock separately.
Uh-huh.
So what I'm saying is I think where you're off is that you were going for like a kit. Like you wanted it all to be there in one piece.
Yes.
Okay. No. You got to buy individually. There's a grip.
This is what that woman was talking about when she was critiquing the show.
Yeah, this is exactly
this sort
right.
of tangential,
right.
bad
You were like, why did I spend an hour in here? So you could get that information.
Hey, listen, man, you want to play some Shotgun Storyworthy?
Yes.
That music can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the Storyworthy Wheel of Truth and tells a true one-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
My hometown. Wow. Well, not a lot of people know about Brattleboro, Vermont. It's a very off the beaten path. There's a lot of people in Vermont that don't know Brattleboro, but there it was. And a lot of people think it's all about maple syrup over there. It's not all about maple. It's also about cherry and grape syrup as well. Now, obviously, you don't get that from a tree. That is something that Dad used to make out in the shed. Well, he called it the shed. Ma thought he had a still out there for cripe's sake. And when you boil the maple, it does have a scent to it, especially during the winter seasons, that smells a little of distilled alcohol. But anyway, God bless him before he passed in that... tractor hit, you know, they put those drainage ditches so close to the road over there. Anyway, look, operating a tractor, well, I'm not legally, I mean, yes, technically intoxicated. All right, you know what? I'm going to start crying. Anyway, Brattleboro, Vermont. Miss it.
See, that's where true stories come from. Absolute lies. I'm like the, I just want to say something about your actual hometown of North Hollywood, where I live now. It's like, one of the things that I appreciate hearing you say is how you were living. You wanted to be in show business, and you had no idea how you could possibly do it. Christine and I, she's from Pittsburgh, I'm from Milwaukee. Everybody around the country is like, how can I get into show business? And the fact that you were literally dead in the center of it, a mile from Warner Brothers and Universal and NBC, and you still could not see a way in, is comforting to me in some way.
Yeah, I didn't know anybody in show business.
And you couldn't comprehend that you would be able to do that.
No, not at all.
Yeah, no, I just wanted
it's
to
really
say, that always
story.
Made me feel better when I heard you talk
it's
about
really
that.
It's really a beautiful success story. And people do think, like, now maybe it's different, but when I grew up in the 70s, you know, there was no internet. And so you thought, like, you fantasized that everybody in California, you know, was wealthy and lived.
They're
in
all living
pools.
In Beverly Hills. They all know each other,
right? Or the people, anybody on TV, of course, they were famous. Whether it was a commercial or a PSA, of course. So you didn't know that. No, that's not true. LA is just like any other city, and show business is just one small industry in that city.
Right. Yeah. Well, I could have told you. I could have went out to Beaver Falls and told you.
Yeah. Right. There you go. I appreciate Beaver that. Falls.
What was the name of your town again?
Gibsonia, but Beaver Falls. My mother's from Beaver Falls.
There's a place outside Milwaukee called Beaver Dam. When you're 12 years old, that's the funniest city you've ever heard of in your life.
All right, you guys, listen.
Well, there's Hancock Park out here.
Sure. You want to
have a good time.
There's intercourse.
Penisville,
as well.
Utah.
All right, you guys, we got to wrap this up in just a minute. Oh, wait, I have one more thing I wanted to say. One more thing we have in common. Adam, well, two things. Our love of John Hyatt, who's going to be at the Saban Theater in September.
Oh, so you're September a genius as well.
10th, giving you that.
Great,
there you
go.
That was all of
it. You heard Terms of My Surrender,
yes.
The new album? Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah,
but you know what I replay all the time, though, is Slow Turning. That one, that never seems to leave the car.
It's very, it means a lot when you become a parent. You know, there's a lot of albums on there that really speak to that. And I'm going to have my kids exposed to that, and they love it. That my son loves John Hyatt.
That's awesome.
He likes Graham Parker, too.
Yeah,
that's great. I got him all the good stuff.
I remember listening to Temporary Beauty, Graham Parker, Temporary Beauty in college. Like, oh, my God. That was like our go-to sex song.
Christine, where
you
were
heard
that,
Temporary Beauty playing down the hall at 11:15? Something was going down.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, did you, in your three-way with Rafael Nadal and Neil Young, can John Hyatt get in there at all?
You know, I don't love him that way.
Okay.
I respect John Hyatt. I really enjoy his stuff. But the other guys, no, I'm completely
And we did decide Raphael has to be in front because you don't want to look at.
Here's something else we have in common. I also taught traffic school.
Wow.
When I first got out here, which is just, but what I used to do is I would book comics. I booked like Maria Bamford, Jackie Cation. I mean, all these guys would come in and do 15 minutes. You know, it had to be clean.
Yeah, right. It had nothing to do with traffic. It was just a way to kill time.
But it was like, yeah, you guys want to talk about red light cameras, or do you want to hear from Danny Gold? What do you want to do?
By the way, your future husband, now ex-husband, came in. I remember he and I both went over there, and he did like the filthiest 15 minutes he'd ever done in this tiny, brightly lit, fluorescent room in like a medical college in Glendale somewhere. And it was the most uncomfortable thing that ever happened to me. I thought it was great.
It was very uncomfortable. Oh, here, one more question.
Yes.
What's your take on Donald Trump running for president? Because you, of course, doing Celebrity Apprentice, you had a relationship with him.
Yes.
And that season,
you
seem to really respect him in that season. I thought you did a great job.
Oh, thanks. You know, I do judge a man quite one of the yardsticks I use to measure guys is their children and what their relationship are or is with their adult children, you know. And if you tell me somebody hasn't spoken to their dad in 9 years and the guy's 35 and he has kids or whatever, there's something about that guy I don't like.
That's right.
I don't trust. I don't whatever. And you know, conversely, when the kids and Ivanka, his daughter, Ivanka? She's
Ivanka.
So dynamite,
she's
so put
poised.
Together, so poised,
beautiful.
So on top of it, and like so everything, and respects him so much that I did actually get a respect from him toward him watching his kids with him. Like, they didn't complain. They weren't celebrity bitchy, you know, crappy, whatever.
I wonder what their mom is like. Because she, you know, she's kind of completely out of the news.
I don't know, but I'm glad he's running. I want somebody who can, first off, you know, for comedic purposes, it's always
good
to have that.
Yeah.
Number one. Number two, though, I like a guy with some, what I always like to call F me money, which is like, I can say the stupidest things in the world because I'm rich. Mm. Like, it's not F you money. It's like, I have so much money that I can do whatever I want and nothing. I can F myself.
Yeah.
And I'll look forward to him entering some debate and not being measured and speaking in these little captioned quotes and, you know, everybody, you know.
It'd be interesting to have a dialogue. With him. I mean,
I would.
What do you say? Not a panel, but the debate nights.
Yeah. I want that. I mean, I want somebody to say to whomever, like, I mean, what I want is this. Like, when you say, hey, Hillary Clinton, let's talk about Benghazi. Let's talk about the school to prison pipeline. I want the person to go, no, I want to talk about Benghazi.
Yeah.
And then
back
she goes, well, I want to talk about inequities in the. No. this is what I want to talk about. Mm. And then have some big buffoon in there yelling and doing whatever. Like, I just want to get it on. Like, yeah. I want these guys.
Get it
it's,
on,
it's,
man.
It's all so castrated now and neutered.
Well,
it's
scripted. Everybody, they have little scripts in their head, and it's all about, all of them, all across the board from left to right, is how do I get the question to what I want to say?
Right.
Just like you just demonstrated.
Yes. And I don't want that. I just want... So, yeah. Good. The more crazy people with opinions...
Yeah.
Could he be
right
with the guy with the drop your... pull up your pants guy?
Or
the rent's too high guy? I want him and Donald Trump in a
that's same
debate
ticket.
Together.
Mm.
That would... That, yes, that's the ticket.
Put him on the ticket. Yeah.
All right, fantastic. You guys. We're going to wrap it up right about now. I want to thank everybody at Sideshow Network. But it's strange, because usually I say everybody here at Sideshow Network... But we're not at Sideshow Network. So everybody here at your studio, Adam, for allowing us to come in and dealing with Matt Fondelier. He was really great. And, of course, thank you so much for your time.
All the other Matts, all the other Mikes.
Thank all
They're
the Mikes,
all awesome.
Would you? And, of course, you guys can follow us on Twitter at Storyworthy and Instagram. And, of course, buy Adam Carolla's new book, Daddy, Stop Talking and Other Things My Kids Want But Won't Be Getting. And then, of course, you have to buy my book, Pit to LAX, My Storyworthy Life. All right. On behalf of Andrew Stephen here in studio, thanks for coming over, Andrew.
Thank you, Andrew.
I appreciate it. And, of course, on behalf of John Thomas Griffith, you know, he's the guy that wrote the theme song, Follow Me.
Fucking hate that guy.
I love that guy. And on behalf of our storyteller tonight, Adam Carolla, thanks
guy,
for
I
being
love.
Our five-year anniversary guest.
Thank
I'm
you.
I'm honored.
It's
thank
a big
you.
Fucking deal, man. Really, thank you.
Thank
and
you.
On behalf of you, Hannes Finney, my dear friend and co-host.
I'm awesome.
My name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story worthy week.
And you can follow me, follow me. I'll take you down to the river. Follow me, follow me. I'll keep you silent.
Thanks for joining us on the Story Worthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
Honey, it's Mom. I want to wish you and Hannes a very happy anniversary for Storyworthy. I'm so proud of you and all the hard work you are constantly doing.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schleichinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years. One of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.